A great miracle happened here. A festival of lights. A casting of lead upon children. An army feasting on epiphany. I know nothing under the sun over the wall no one mentions. Some must die wrapped in floral petroleum blanket, no coverage. I have come to everyday Armageddon, a ladder left unattended. Six candles burn down a house, a horse tied to smoke. Some must die to send a signal. Flatline scream, live stream, river, a memory longer than lifespans. The living want to die in their country. No open doors, no open seas, no open hands full of heart, five daughters wrapped in white. Each day jihad, each day faith over fear, each day a mirror, a fire. The living want to die with their families. The girl loses limbs, her brother gathers arms. Some must die for not dying. Children on hospital floor, mother beside them, the father in shock. This is my family. I have failed them. This is my family. I did not raise their heads. I have buried them. My family. What will I do now? My family is bread. One fish, one people, cut into pieces. There is a thirst, thefts, life. There is a hunger, a winter within winter. Some must die to bring salvation. I have come to end times always present. The woman lost parents, her children, and screams, my sister. I have lost my sister. I want to die. My sister's eyes were honey, her voice mine. I can't face this. Only God, my sister. Medics killed, schools hit, convoys bombed. The injured are dying, the dead are buried. In 3 hours, the people pray together and curse. The people mourn loud and quiet, always too loud, not enough. Some must die because they are the vicinity. Some must die because it was written. No, army does not apologize, has never apologized. Authority chases paper, assembly, occupation settles deeper. A great miracle here. The living are dying, and the dying living. A festival of lights, a strip, a land, a blaze, the sea, a mirror of fire. The casting of lead upon children. Their heads roll off their shoulders into streets. Their tops spin in hands. An army feasting on epiphany. Driving future into history. Carrying torches into women.
Incursion and bombardment of Gaza is not about destroying Hamas. It is not about stopping rocket fire into Israel. It is not about achieving peace. The Israeli decision to rain death and destruction on Gaza, to use lethal weapons of the modern battlefield on a largely defenseless civilian population, is the final phase in the decades-long campaign to ethnically cleanse Palestinians. The assault on Gaza is about creating squalid, lawless, and impoverished ghettos where life for Palestinians will be barely sustainable.
This cannot be understood in terms of just these discrete injustices. It is much more clearly understood by using a phrase such as ethnic cleansing, because that's what it really amounts to.
Gaza is on the threshold of becoming the first territory to be intentionally reduced to a state of abject destitution with the knowledge, acquiescence, and some would say, encouragement of the international community.
a small state of 7 million residents, 5.5 of them Jewish, is making itself the enemy of the whole Arab world and now the whole Muslim world. Such a state does not have any guarantee of survival in the long run. Therefore, saving the Palestinians is also saving Israel, and possibly it's saving the world because this situation endangers the whole world.
To understand the Palestinian issue, as I said, one has to understand the story. And this is the story. From 47 to 67 to 2000 to 2003, a process of land appropriation, annexation, settlement building that did not stop for a single minute since 1947. With wars, conflicts or peace process, with agreements or no agreements, the same processes continued to happen. With Labour in government or Likud in government or a coalition in government, the same processes continued to happen.
Much of the pre-state Zionist ideology that mobilized Eastern European communities for the trek to mandatory Palestine was premised on the virtual absence of inhabitants, on what was often depicted as either a completely empty or a hopelessly arid land awaiting redemption. Later, or in some cases simultaneously with that contention, when the discovery of actual Palestinians could no longer be deferred or denied, there was a concerted effort to devise ways of spiriting them away, for which the war of 1948 provided field commanders and David Ben-Gurion himself with a rich opportunity. These are amply attested to in the Israeli military archive, as combed assiduously by a number of Jewish as well as numerous Arab researchers, including Masalha himself.
Many peoples, Romans, Greeks, Arabs, Turks, and others, have invaded and conquered Palestine since the Jews were dispossessed, but none of them have ever identified themselves as a nation with that country. It is only the Jewish people, attached to Palestine over 3,000 years and made by Palestine, which has made of Palestine a historic country. Jews are remaking Palestine again today. Some 1,200,000 Jews, the remnant of European Jewry and the Jewish communities in Oriental countries. There is ample room for these and more in Palestine without disturbing the present population, Jewish or Arab.
David Ben-Gurion played an amazing role. He was really a unique person. There isn't one aspect of life in the new Jewish existence in Palestine which he did not take part in. The man was a genius, he was unique. People like me spoil the party a little bit when we come and say, yes, it's true, but he was also an ethnic cleanser.
The Jewish Commonwealth will cooperate with its Arab neighbors to promote economic development, social progress, and political independence in the Middle East, and will thus become a pillar of strength for the peace, prosperity, and progress of the entire Middle East.
The State of Israel was founded in 1948 following a war which the Israelis called the War of Independence and the Palestinians called the Nakba, the catastrophe. A haunted, persecuted people sought to find a shelter and state for itself and did so at a horrible price to another people. During the War of 1948, more than half of the Palestinian population of at the time, which was 1,380,000 people, were driven off their homeland by the Israeli army. Though Israel officially claimed that a majority of the refugees fled and were not expelled, it still refused to allow them to return, as a UN resolution demanded shortly after the 1948 war. Thus, the Israeli land was obtained through ethnic cleansing of the indigenous Palestinian inhabitants.
We interviewed Jewish soldiers or troops that participated in the 1948 war. They tell about systematic expulsions. They talk about massacres. They talk about methods of expelling people. Why do they talk now? Why did they refuse to tell us what happened in 1948 when the debate about the new history, as was so successfully described here, was at its peak? Why didn't they say, you can stop this debate? We were the people who committed the crimes that these historians are talking about. So you want to debate the moral issue, that's okay, but don't debate the factual issue. We were there as commanders, as officers, as soldiers. We occupied villages. We expelled people. We didn't allow them to go back. And when necessary, we massacred them so that the expulsion would be quicker.
Back in 1947, there was a decision made by United Nations which proposed that there should be two states, one Israeli state over 55% of the land of Palestine and one Palestinian state in the green areas, which would be 45%. Of course, this didn't happen. Israel was established not over 55%, but over 78%. 700,000 Palestinians became refugees. Now they are about 5 million. And what remained was the West Bank and Gaza Strip.
When the first Israeli historians like me were saying, whatever you told us about 1948, we think you were lying to us. You kicked out the Palestinians. You planned the expulsion. You did things that we didn't think the Jews should do 3 years after the Holocaust. It was not just about facts. It was young Israelis who said, how could you do such things to other people 3 years after the Holocaust? How could you lie to us for so many years and tell us that these people left voluntarily?
Yeah.
ever since the Balfour Declaration, decided in London here where Jews would have a homeland. It was a European decision without any effort at consulting the people affected by the decision. The Balfour Declaration promised the Jewish people a homeland in historic Palestine. The UN came along in 1947 and proposed a partition that gave the Palestinians 45% of the historic mandated former Ottoman province. And that 45%, again, that UN decision, which now seems like a dream from a Palestinian perspective to have that realized, but that UN decision was again something made in New York without any effort to consult the people that were affected by it. It was again a kind of colonialist way of solving a European problem. It resulted in the so-called War of Independence that ended up with this Green Line, an expanded Israel, where the Palestinians were reduced to a territory of 22% of the historic Palestine.
Had Israel stopped there in 1948, I could probably live with this. As an Israeli, I grew up believing that this primal sin that our state was founded on might be forgiven one day because the founder's generation was driven by the faith that this was the only way to save the Jewish people from the danger of another Holocaust. But it didn't stop there. In 1967, Israel occupied the Palestinian territories and a new wave of refugees had to go on exile. Since then, Israel is still occupying these territories with more and more oppressive means. And today, 3.5 million Palestinians live under Israeli occupation.
And it was an extraordinary and maybe ill-considered concession of the PLO back in 1988 to say, we will accept this 22% as the basis of a viable Palestinian state. That 22% will satisfy our self-determination aspirations, and we will accept the existence of Israel. And now what we've seen is that 22% has been diminished by another 38% through the settlement blocks, through the roads that have been built around the settlements, through the separation wall, and by the changes in the character of the city of Jerusalem. So now it's 14% that is at stake for the Palestinians. And what's important about this progression is the steady increase in the proportionate control over this contested land by the Israeli side, and the squeezing of the Palestinians more and more.
In 1988, after lots of discussions, Palestinians accepted a compromise. They were told, if you accept that compromise, the peace will come. And the compromise was that there will be a Palestinian state in West Bank, Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem. But to our great surprise, even with that acceptance, and even after Oslo agreement were signed, the same processes continued of settlements, of land appropriation, as if nothing has changed. So instead of this compromise, we got Barak's offer in the year 2000. And Barak's offer was about cutting some more pieces from the West Bank to keep settlements, to annex them to Israel, to annex most of East Jerusalem, to prevent the Palestinian state, future state, from having borders with anybody. It was not a generous offer at all. It was misrepresentation of the reality when people were talking about a generous offer. And Israel abused to a large extent the incompetence of the Palestinian Authority, which could not explain to its own people and to the world what really happened in Camp David. But as if this is not enough, Sharon came with his own plan, and that is to take more of the land of the West Bank, 58% to be precise. And then he is now representing his view. With the building of the wall, this is what we will end up with. I don't know what you call this. You call it a state, bantustans, ghettos maybe. Definitely this is not a state.
I was actually traveling with Amira Haas, who of course is the very honorable and fine Israeli journalist for Haaretz. All the villages we went to, the Palestinian Mukhtars met us, and there was lots of cups of tea. And then they produced this huge file of documents from the Israeli occupation authorities in Hebrew, signed, although the signatures were illegible, saying that this man cannot build another story in his house, and if he does, his house will be destroyed. This man cannot build another story. So the families can't expand, they can't get married, therefore, of course, they'll go to Jordan or Lebanon or somewhere else. One of the most weirdest laws is that the Palestinians in these villages in Area C, 62% of the West Bank, cannot dig more than 3 inches into the ground. Now, this is an obvious problem because not only then can they not operate sewage or water, but they can't put up electricity poles because you can't put a pole 3 inches in the ground and fall over. So what they've done is they've got these huge concrete blocks and laid them on the earth and then stuck the electricity pole into the concrete block. Now, how long do you keep hanging on in the face of this kind of what is clear, not just harassment, it's oppression? And, you know, when you talk to the Israelis at the checkpoint, they acknowledge, yes, they can't, they're not allowed to dig more than 3 inches in case they put a bomb in the ground, you know. So clearly, Area C, 62% of the West Bank, cannot be inside a Palestinian state. This means that, as opposed to what we believe, which is that Mahmoud Abbas is generously being allowed to negotiate for 22% of Mandate Palestine, the original Palestine when the Brits were there, he's actually negotiating for about 10.8 or 10.9% of Mandate Palestine, and that ain't no state. It's not viable, it's not workable, it's not secure, it can't work. So I think, you know, the problem is that public opinion, partly because of us journalists and our endless waffling about peace process, it never was a process anyway, they still believe there's hope, there's light at the end of the tunnel, all the usual cliches. It's gone, Palestine's gone.
called 3.5 million people under occupation with no rights, the question that always bothered the occupiers is how is it possible to control these people in a way that they will not disturb the life of the occupier? And the solution that has been developing since this period of 2000, and particularly with the construction of the wall, is a complex system of open-air prisons. As far as I know, this method of imprisoning a whole nation, not just a group of people, taking a whole nation, putting them in prisons as a means to control and gain quiet for the occupiers is new in history.
Palestinians have developed a moral and political solidarity with each other, nothing less in fact than a national identity, that it has been the goal of Israel to deny, obliterate, and refuse to acknowledge as sovereign. To argue backwards for a moment, let me cite only one recent example of what I mean by denial and a refusal to acknowledge. It was precisely that refusal that flawed the Oslo process from the moment it was undertaken in 1993, alas, with unqualified and unprepared Palestinian representatives delegated to a task which was designed not to restore but to further postpone and deflect the fulfillment of Palestinian aspirations. In this, neither Israel nor the United States was moved by an acknowledgement of past injustices, nor by a spirit of contrition or of reconciliation. With their batteries of legal experts backed by disproportionate military weight in both countries, and at the same time as more than double the pre-existing number of settlements were being created on Palestinian land and more human rights abused, Israel and the United States divided and subdivided, occupied and ever diminishing bits of Palestinian territory into smaller and less viable units for the unfortunate Palestinian Authority to take over and misrule, all under the misleading, not to say willfully deceptive, rubric of the peace process.
The wall will be about 750 kilometers in length. It will be 8 meters high and three times as long and twice as high as Berlin Wall used to be. Trenches of barbed wire, snipers, and watchtowers will exist, and with automatic machine guns that shoot at any moving object that tries to get close to the wall. Is it for security? Well, let me tell you that the total length of borders between West Bank and Gaza Strip and Israel, the so-called Green Line, is not more than 200 kilometers. So why do we need 752 kilometers to guard borders that are only 200 kilometers? Because, of course, this wall is not about security. It's about land appropriation.
You know that there is a legal purview of the Israeli High Court of Justice over the occupation. And it kind of regulates what land could be taken from Palestinians and what could not be taken from Palestinians. It's a kind of like, in terms, of course it's not recognized internationally, but in terms of Israel itself, it's a sort of a legalizing the occupation. In order then to take land that belonged to Palestinian private owners, you have to say that there is a temporary military necessity to do that. So, of course, a sort of a project that presents itself, even if rhetorically, as a fortification project, and that is the in the early years of the settlement project. This is exactly what the military told us, the court, that what we're doing is that we are building civilian settlements as fortification from an eventual, from a possible invasion of Arab states across the Jordan River from the east. So it was that, so that private land that was taken for building the settlements was taken legally, okay, the legal sort of formula was temporary military necessity. So, of course, each one of those settlements has to be defined as temporary. Sometimes it was a complete absurd. You know, in the court they were saying, if that is temporary, why are you building it in such a sort of grand fashion? Why you are, you know, planting gardens? Why you are putting red tile roof over it? You know, and it was always a kind of like a, in a wink and a, you know, sort of agreed finally.
There was a woman I know very well. Her name was Aisha. She was from Qibya, the same village that Sharon destroyed in 1953. This woman was 22 years old. She had kidney problems, and she needed kidney dialysis 3 times a week. And one day there was a checkpoint in front of her village, and she and her father tried so many times to cross without success for a whole week. And finally, she got very sick. They called us. We sent an ambulance at 12 midnight. But the army would not let the ambulance pass. And she died at home. This is one case of many of people who die because of checkpoints. Tell me, if that has happened in any other country, what would be the reaction? Why is it, in our case, that the life of Palestinians do not count, and the Israeli behavior is allowed to be impunitive to international law?
What still happens in occupied Palestine is an attack on our most fundamental humanitarian platform, which we like to think that the Western world is sort of standing on. And it opened a very worrisome feeling that the Palestinians are stamped out as some sort of secondary creatures, not human beings. They are Untermensch, they are under people, they are quote-unquote terrorists or Hamas or Jihad, whatever you call them. And it seems like the Israeli government and the Israeli military forces apply another morality and another standard to the way they treat the Palestinians as they would have done if they were treating other people. And this, of course, is an extreme challenge to all of us who believe in human rights, who believe in international law, and who believe in the fact that even in conflict there are certain rules and regulations that should be obeyed.
The lightest form that the Israeli army uses is the so-called rubber bullets. 100 children so far have lost their eyes because of the so-called rubber bullets. But these children are lucky, because they did not die. Many others have died because these are not rubber bullets. These are metallic shards or cylinders that are covered with a thin piece of rubber. And we call them the nightmare of the neurosurgeon, because if they hit somebody's head, they penetrate the skull and they establish a track in the brain. And if the neurosurgeon tries to remove the bullet, he ends up hurting a great amount of the brain tissue, killing the patient. And if you leave the bullet there, because it's heavy, each time the patient moves his or her head, the bullet will move, and creating more damage. So, and of course, eventually killing the patient. It is a nightmare, because this is the lightest form of weapon that is used, and when it hits the upper part of the body, it's like a death sentence.
Torture, illegal detention, assassination, assaults against civilians with missiles, helicopters and jet fighters, the annexation of territory, the transportation of civilians from one place to another for the purpose of imprisonment, mass killing, as in Khana, Jenin, Sabra and Shatila, to mention only the most obvious, the denial of rights to free passage and unimpeded civilian movement, education, medical aid, the use of civilians for human shields, humiliation, punishment of families, house demolitions on a mass scale, destruction of agricultural land, expropriation of water, illegal settlements, economic pauperization, attacks on hospitals, medical workers and ambulances, the killing of UN personnel, to name only the most outrageous abuses. All these, it should be noted with emphasis, have been carried on with the total, unconditional support of the United States.
Whoever the Palestinians are, however capable they were or incapable they were, however nice they are or not so nice they are, they would not tolerate every day what Zionism is doing to them. Sometimes they would react by a non-violent demonstration. Sometimes they would plant bombs in shopping malls. Sometimes they would launch rockets into Israel towns in the south. But there is no way, and there is no case in history where people who were oppressed for more than a century would sit like a group of Quakers and say every day, thank you, give us more of what you have done to us yesterday and even more powerfully. And because they are responding, Zionism has a mechanism that says, you see? See what these people are doing? So we, as Benny Morris says, we have to ethnically cleanse them again. What can you do? They don't learn a lesson. We kick them out, we massacred, we destroyed, and they still didn't get the message. So we have to do it again, and again, and again.
I am the sharp tip of the army's claw. Must look the part, must look the law. These uniforms are red rags and bombers. Knowing that my death will bring them on us. So fuck the scholars and the white collars. Your nerves aren't as ragged as this soldier. And gets colder. Feels like everyone got a chip on their shoulder. Oh, what if today's the day my luck leaves me? Everything is normally uneasy. No reason why it wouldn't be this evening. That's why every day I dream of leaving. Still they come, they coo. Clenched are the hands or with tightening screws. Control how the population moves. This is what the rebels are making us do. Alerting on anti tablets. Go straight to the head and jump in. They hold in the scruff of the neck of the country. So much sun does the blood see the checkpoint. Teeth and guns, the bad apples made me numb to their cries with the request denied. I hate the fucking look in their eye, but I don't wanna live like this. Let you in, but not your wife and kids who may or may not aspire to be martyrs. But the state will clamp down hard regardless. Preemption is self-defense. That might be severance for live rounds of residence. When even their children throw stones, so I can't wait to go home.
Keep us
signed today, legit, these kids make it too hard. The worst part, I clock on in 5 minutes. Are we at war with them or we them Mexicans? When testing them means resting in bed with a bump on your head for many days. Like my mother say, we can't afford that anyway. Whichever way you look at it, lay of the land is crooked. Holy land's mad, shook with hatred. This road is ancient and now the gatekeeper's 18, which is clearly hated. That doesn't change the fact that he's still got me waiting on land. The U.S. states is mine. You can see how that frustrates the mind of a young man, opposite, holding the gun, telling him to stop, run, even just for fun. And if he gets too much, that other man runs. No such luck, and if the rocket struck tonight, we might be stuck for the night, along with some time, and I'd be up for a fight. Ain't seen enough of the light, seems nothing is right. This kid's tired and it shows, but he's seen me enough times to know. Let me go, why the scruff and my fata? I'm asking, why'd you give a fuck? Either way, you won't let me up out of this dust. I see you through a cloud of mistrust. This affirms it, learn shit. The kids around it learn quick.
Keep us in around our shore.
In
2006, the Palestinians were urged to have a democratic election. George Bush said, wonderful, have a democracy. So the Palestinians went to vote, and those pesky Palestinians voted for the wrong people. They voted for Hamas. They didn't vote for Hamas because they wanted an Islamic Republic. They voted for Hamas because they were sick and tired of the corruption of Mahmoud Abbas and Arafat, and the whole, Arafat's gone, but the whole Palestinian corrupt old fogies from Fatah. I mean, I brought it home to me once. I was in Jerusalem and I got a call from Fatah. You know, one of our officials, his home has been shelled by an Israeli tank. Rushed down in my car from Jerusalem. There was the house, there was the hole, and there was the Israeli tank. But what struck me when I went into the house amid the rubble was all these gold-plated taps in the bathroom. There was the story. You don't vote for people like that. You vote for people who are clean, right? Anyway, then 2007, Hamas take over, very bloodily, the Gaza Strip. And they then will not conform to the Oslo Agreement. Their argument, of course, which was quite logical, was, well, the Israelis haven't conformed. You know, they've been renegotiating Oslo, Y River and all these other places for a long time. But, of course, Hamas are not going to start off by acknowledging everything that Arafat did and then becoming the PLO or the Palestinian Authority. But they've got very big heads. You know, it's a very corrupt organization, Hamas. They think they're the Hezbollah of the South. They're not. They're nothing like Hezbollah. Then, you see, you've got to remember certain other things. Why are they really firing all these stupid tin pot missiles into Israel to provoke an assault? Okay, you can provoke an assault if you can then fight the Israelis. But they couldn't fight the Israelis. You know, they killed at least 35 Palestinian alleged collaborators, but only killed 13 Israelis, of whom two were Arab Israelis, by the way. And then they lost 1,300 of their own people, most of them civilians. That is not a great victory. I mean, Hezbollah were very, very cynical.
Prior to Hamas's June 2007 takeover of the Strip, 54% of Gaza's employment was generated by the private sector. Gaza's manufacturers imported 95% of their inputs and exported their finished products primarily to Israel, with some to the West Bank. In June of 2005, there were 3,900 factories employing 35,000 people. By September of 2008, a little over 3 years later, the number of operating factories had declined to 23. 16 engage in food processing, 6 produce wheat flour, and only 1 manufactures clothing. Approximately 100,000 people, virtually the entire private sector, lost their jobs.
Israel controlled every aspect of the economy of Gaza, applying economical pressure, deciding when they let goods in and exports out. They have used starvation as means already before the present situation. What we see is complete strangulation of the Palestinian society. Israel does not allow not just international aid, not just that it holds the tax money, that it owns the Palestinians. It doesn't let the Palestinians have any living, including not allowing fishermen to go out to fish.
There is not enough food. And this has caused widespread anemia, lack of red blood cells, and it has caused widespread protein malnutrition, leading to stunting. And stunting is defined as a growth in length in children, which is below 2 standard deviations of the average height of a child at that age, meaning you are shorter than you should be, because you have too little protein to eat, and your brain development is hampered by this protein deficiency. So this is a slow starvation of a whole population, which is man-made and imposed by the occupants. And these numbers are not disputable. They are published in renowned medical journals like Lancet, and the research shows us that this health condition for a whole population is severely hampered and diminished by the consequences of the blockade. And of course, when you then have a bombardment causing a large number of injuries, also in children,
you will have a very bad starting point to survive the injuries, both because your body is depleted of blood and proteins, and the risk is high that if you survive, you will have more infections and limited wound healing, worse than if you had a normal nutritional status.
This is the wall of stone faces. This is the plain of lost skulls. How much blood must fallow before we have had enough? This is the wall of stone faces. This is the plain of dry skulls. How much slaughter does it take before we have had enough? No spear, no arrow, no shield or sabre close at hand. Only love. Blast of cannon barely muted, now thunder of jet, hiss missile.
Have said that is that we are quite sure that they used a new type of weapon, which is called the dime weapon, dense inert metal explosives, which is a heavy metal alloy with a tremendous explosive force that do not deliver shrapnels as an ordinary grenade would do, because the explosive device is contained in a plastic casing. But the force of the explosion is such that it will rip off the arms, the legs, or cut people in two even. And we saw a large number of injuries that cannot be explained having been caused by other types of weapon. The first time they used this weapon was in Lebanon in 2006 and in Gaza in July 2006 during what the Israeli called the Operation Submarine. So I had seen these injuries in Shifa before. And the Israeli military forces and the government have not admitted having used it, but they have not denied having used it either. These weapons are developed by the U.S. Air Force, and it's a new generation of extremely destructive weapons, yet not banned internationally because nobody knows about them. It is probable that they will cause cancer. At least the residuals of these explosives do cause cancer in experimental studies in animals. So we were seeing a large number of these dime bomb explosive injuries. We did also see flechette injuries from these small steel needles in the bombs. We did not see phosphorus burns, but we know that there were patients with phosphorus burns coming to Shifa. And the Israelis have admitted that they did use phosphorus grenades against, among other things, UN schools that served as shelters for Palestinian civilians.
Israel uses sophisticated attack jets and naval vessels to bomb densely crowded refugee camps, schools, apartment blocks, mosques, and slums to attack a population that has no air force, no air defense, no navy, no heavy weapons, no artillery units, no mechanized armor, no command and control, no army, and calls it a war. It is not a war. It is murder.
You're not aware that we're aware of your despair. Don't show your tears to your oppressor. Don't show your tears. Try not to cry, dear.
Angel with David's flew Goliath. This very same place that we be at. Passing through the sand of time. This land been a victim of countless crimes. From crusaders, mongers, to the present aggression. Then the Franks, now even a cruel oppression. If these walls could speak, imagine what would they say. For me in this path that I walk on, there's only one way. Bullets may kill, bones may break. Still I throw stones like David before me. And I say,
try not to cry,
no pierdas la fe, la sed, la calma el que hace agua de la arena. Y tú que te levantas con orgullo entre las piedras, has hecho mares de este polvo.
I throw stones at my eyes, for too long they've been dry. Plus they see what they shouldn't from oppressed babies to thighs. I throw stones at my tongue, cause it should really keep its peace. I throw stones at my feet, cause the straying lead to defeat. Couple of big ones at my heart, cause the thing is freezing cold. But my nub's still alive and kicking, unstoppable on a roll. I throw bricks at the devil, so I be sure to hit him. But first at the man in the mirror, so I can chase out the venom.
Little boy, shining ahead. Just another kiss and I'd get some bread. Not the first murder, nor the last. Again and again a repetition of the past.
Since the very first day, same story.
Young ones, old ones, some glory. How can it be? Has the whole world turned blind? Or is it just cause it's only affecting my kind? If these walls could speak, imagine what would they say? Me, this path that I walk on, there's only one way. Bullets may kill, bones may break.
There's also another Israel and another Israel-Palestine forming there the last years. There's lots of people struggling in Israel, demonstrating, signing petitions, doing spending all their days on struggle. But most specifically, there's one form of struggle that developed, which is really marvelous. Along the line of the wall, the Palestinian farmers, are determined not to wait for the third Nakba to happen, but rather stand there on the ground in front of the Israeli bulldozers and an army in a non-violent opposition. Armed only with the courage of people who have stuck to their land all these years, they stand there with just with their body, and Israelis have been joining them. So the struggle has become in the last 3 years a joint Palestinian-Israeli struggle. And they are standing army brutality and going there every week for three years. I've been there. I was in Mascha, I was in Bilin, but it became impossible for me because the army's brutality is too big. I cannot stand it physically. They shoot, they beat you, they tear gas. I don't understand how the kids of 20 can stand it, but I cannot. But when I leave, I also leave the struggle, but I pledge to my comrades in Israel that I will continue the struggle because the road that Edward Said and Mandela showed us the road of political, international, non-violent struggle is still there and can lead us to victory. So I think any solution, the solution should be based first on giving the Palestinian land back to the Palestinians. The Palestinians should get back all their lands beyond the 67 border. They can have their own state there if that's what the two people want for now. And we can hope that in the future we will find a more beautiful and more imaginative way to live together.